Welcome to The Deep End, Episode 7. I am your co-host, Hamed. Joining me is my good friend and sports partner, Jimo.
What's going on, everyone? I know it's been a while. We both kind of had some personal stuff to take care of, but the show must go on, and we're back. Back with another great episode. I might get into the Nations League final that was played on Sunday, as pretty much a couple hours after we were recording this, or before we're recording this, sorry. So, yeah, let's jump right into it, man.
And we definitely will. We do apologize for taking basically a week off to tend to our personal matters. And we also apologize that this episode is going to be mostly based on last weekend's games. So we're not going to be talking about the week that we missed, the games that happened during the week that we missed. But, you know, like we said, the show must go on. We do not want to play catch-up. We feel like, you know, recording extra episodes or making a very long episode for you guys, that was on the cards, but ultimately we decided against it. We want to stick to the schedule. And not a lot of great games were played that weekend anyway, so I feel like, you know, we have more to talk about this week, especially during the international break and stuff like that. So, without further ado, let's get underway. I do not remember what day it was on, but it was during the last weekend. Chelsea and Southampton played off, and Chelsea ended up winning 3-1. Very, very solid work from Chelsea. Also, very solid work from Southampton, you know, for them to show that much fight with being a man down, essentially. The game was really exciting. We had a goal in the first 10 minutes off of a corner. Corner taken, bounces off Ruben Loftus' cheeks, head, and right into the lap of Trevo Chalobah, who scored his second goal at the Bridge, and his second goal for Chelsea as well. And I thought it was amazing, because I feel like this guy story of the year for Chelsea, you know, obviously bouncing around between, you know, English clubs and French clubs in League One, and finally finding a home with Chelsea, and also contributing is really nice. It was a very, very simple goal. You know, the goalkeeper was basically not there. Literally just a very, very easy goal for him. In the ninth minute, you know, Chelsea taking early advantage. And later on, you kind of see James Ward-Prowse. If anyone, you know, follows this team, you'd see that James Ward-Prowse is basically like the unofficial captain of the team. He is, you know, he's their free kick specialist. He's also the penalty specialist. And the reason I bring up the penalty specialist is because he actually scored a penalty. It was in the 61st minute. The penalty itself was, well, he did a pretty tough slide tackle on Livramento. And for those of you who don't know, Livramento was a former Chelsea player who just could not find, you know, his form at Chelsea. You know, he just could not break that depth chart because Chelsea is so immensely deep. And anyways, you see Livramento going into the box. Chilwell, he kind of felt like he overcommitted to this challenge. And Livramento, you could kind of see, was a straight pen, because it wasn't just the tackle, the contact that kind of made it look bad. It was the way that Livramento basically bounced off the ground when he landed. You could tell it was a very, very tough challenge. Very, very tough challenge. You know, James Ward-Prowse, like I said, penalty specialist and free kick specialist for Southampton. Izzy stuff for him. You know, Mendy goes left. You know, James Ward-Prowse also shoots, you know, in the opposite direction. Really, really easy stuff for him. And they really, really could have used him for the rest of the game, but unfortunately, he actually got a red card about 15 minutes later. You know, Chelsea kind of feeling the heat, you know, with it being 1-1 now, and they haven't scored since the ninth minute. You see the Southampton players advancing. You know, they're applying pressure on the ball. And Edouard Mendy, the goalkeeper for Chelsea, you know, he's just making a straight goal kick to the players. And James Ward-Prowse, he ends up doing a very vicious slide tackle on Ruben Loftus-Cheek. It was awful. You could see that his knee basically bent backwards, and that was really tough to see. You know, in real time, it did not look that bad. but the referee obviously stopped the game and he wanted to watch like a replay of it, you know, see it maybe in like slow motion, things like that. And when you see the replay on the screen, no, you can tell there is no intention of getting to the ball there. James Ward-Prowse, unfortunately, he just gets straight red for that one. And James Ward-Prowse being out of the game really opened things up for Chelsea because they ended up winning 3-1. You know, you had goals from Timo Werner and you had a goal from Ben Chilwell, both in the span of 10 minutes. The second goal was from Timo Werner, like I just said. Very, very beautiful play for Chelsea. This is where they kind of flourish into the open game, you know, the crossing game. They have a lot of players that can get these crosses in. They have a lot of players that can get, like, these goals off of crosses. It was just a beauty to watch. It was, you know, coming into the box, you know, just a straight cross right to the edge of the box to Azpilicueta, who just passes it right in front of Timo Werner. Timo Werner was just literally on goal. He was literally right there on the line, and all he had to do was tap it in. And it was great to see Timo Werner finally getting some time for Chelsea and making a contribution, because obviously, you know, his time at Chelsea has been pretty controversial in the very least, because, you know, he's just not doing that well, you know, compared to his days at RB Leipzig. And, you know, if you don't see that, then I don't know what Romelu Lukaku is doing at Chelsea at the moment, because they clearly brought him in because Timo Werner just wasn't doing the job. And Chelsea, they just keep stacking it on. 5 minutes later, all of the players are in the box, essentially. Kind of felt like everyone was in the box. You know, shot after shot after shot. You know, Azpilicueta tries going for a shot. He bounces off the bar. You know, Timo Werner tries going for a shot. Deflection off, you know, the keeper deflects it. Ben Chilwell, he shoots. It also deflects off the goalkeeper. But the difference is Ben Chilwell actually shot into the goal. Like, the goalkeeper deflected it while he was inside. He was past the line. It kind of looked iffy at first. But then, like I said, the referee takes a second look at it. He awards the goal to Ben Chilwell, putting Chelsea up 3-1 in the 89th minute. Obviously, things look, you know, pretty much over at that point. And Chelsea, they move on. That puts them in first place with 16 points. You know, Chelsea, they're looking very dangerous. They're looking like Premier League title winners at the moment, not just contenders. I feel like they are definitely primed to win.
Yeah, I agree with you. And especially the fact that Ward-Prowse was out with the red card. He kind of holds their midfield together. And I feel like after that red card, Chelsea kind of had like open road, so to speak. And they were just moving the ball however they wanted. They were getting in dangerous positions. So definitely very, very, very dumb tackle, I must say, by James Ward-Prowse to kind of put his team in jeopardy like that. But yeah, Chelsea, I really like what Thomas Tuchel's doing. In my opinion, he's the best manager in football right now, just because his team can play whatever tactics, and he changes the tactics on the fly, like during the game. Like, this guy and his team, they're so well coached, they just adapt to that. So, I mean, very, very high praise. I really like him. I really like Thomas Tuchel. I think he's an amazing coach. Like I said, best coach right now in all of football. And Chelsea, yeah, they're looking primed for it, but with the Premier League, is so crazy.
They do.
So crazy. You never really know what can happen, man.
Yeah, and just for a last point, the genius of Thomas Tuchel, you know, you obviously look at his tactics, but you also look at his rotation. Like, you go into the squad, the lineups that he used for this game. He used a lot of players that haven't gotten time recently, but yeah, they did fantastic. You see players such as Trevor Chalobah. Like I said, he scored, but he hasn't been playing much for Chelsea. You see people like Ruben Loftus-Cheek, who basically got no time whatsoever under Frank Lampard. Literally, I think he got 0 minutes. Like, he wasn't used much. You have, you know, people like Callum Hudson-Odoi. Callum Hudson-Odoi, you go back a year ago, he was one of the most wanted wingers in the world. I remember that him and Bayern Munich were going into, like, very deep negotiations, and Bayern Munich were essentially ready to pay, like, upwards of 87 to 88 million for this winger. And then I believe this is his first game this year. So it kind of feels like, yes, he's not getting the game time because, like I said, Chelsea is very stacked at basically every position. But, you know, the fact that you could see such results with players that haven't gotten a lot of, you know, game time in is very impressive.
Right. Yeah. He just does the whole plug and play thing so well. And His team is so well coached to the point where they can just adapt to that. Like it's pretty remarkable.
It's crazy because you look at the bench. You have, you know, Saul, he's on the bench. You have Ross Barkley, he's on the bench. You know, he came in during the last 10 minutes. You have players like Mason Mount who came in the last 10 minutes. You have players who didn't play at all. You have Hakeem Ziyech. You know, he didn't play a minute. Kai Harris, he didn't play a minute. Marcus Alonso, mm-hmm. didn't play a minute. You know, all these fantastic players on the bench, and yet you still see results from this team. Like, they have my respect. They are definitely, in my eyes, currently the most dangerous team in the Premier League, without a doubt.
Oh, yeah, man. I definitely agree with that. And then moving on to the next game on Saturday, Man United against Everton. Everton traveling to Old Trafford. The story pregame was the lineup for this game. There was one notable number 7 that was not in the starting lineup, and it kind of gave people kind of caused a little uproar, especially among fantasy people that had him on fantasy. Ronaldo, that is. Yeah, a lot of people did kind of get botched by that. But that was kind of the pregame story. This game kind of it was a good game. Both teams had really good chances in the beginning as well. What's his name? Anthony Martial. He scored first, kind of on the edge of halftime, 43rd minute. It was a nice goal. And then during this game, I felt like after halftime, Man United came out kind of flat. I feel like Man United, they're either a first half team or a second half team. Like, I feel like they play really good either one of those halves. Like, the full game, I've only watched maybe like 2 or 3 games I can remember that I've seen them play like a full 90 minutes, like really, really good game, which is hard to do for anyone. I mean, but I feel like they're one of those teams that they're either like a first half team or a second half team, either or. Anyway, Andros Townsend equalized in the second half. It was a nice counterattack for Everton. It was a nice build-up straight from... I can't remember who lost the ball on Man United, but someone in the defense lost the ball, and Everton just picked it up, and they kind of just went pass, and Townsend got it. And, yeah, he put it past De Gea, and he kind of did the Ronaldo celebration, which people at first were kind of like, wait, is he taking a shot at Ronaldo? But he came out and said that it was, like, out of respect because Ronaldo was one of his idols and stuff. So it was more of, like, a respect thing. And then there was some controversy at the end.
I still feel like it was a little bit disrespectful, honestly.
Yeah, yeah, it is, because, you know, he's not, like, you're doing it in his own, like, house, so to speak. You're doing it in Old Trafford. And, yeah, I see why people would take it that way as disrespected, even though he tried to play it off. Who knows how he meant it, obviously. He's obviously going to come out and say, like, the politically correct thing. But who knows how he meant it. But a lot of people did take it that way, and I could see why. There was some controversy at the end of this game. Yerry Mina thought he won it, and it was like a tap into an empty net. But VAR checked, and it was offside. That was very, very close. That was a very close offside call. It depends on what angle you look at it from. There were some angles where it didn't look offsides, and there was an angle where it did look offside. So, I don't know. That one was very tough, and especially because it was a tap in, and they would have won, which would have been huge for Everton to win that game in hostile territory.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, man, they just ended up sharing the points, and that's kind of how it went. But just a couple interesting stats from this game. Everton have 14 points from 7 Premier League games this season. Only in 2004-05, they had more after their opening 7 matches in the competition, when they would go on to achieve their best position in the division, which is 4th. So that's something to look at too. So Everton have been moving pretty decent. They've won 4, they've drawn 2, and they lost 1. And then also,
and
after
they just
drawing,
goes to show you. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was gonna say after drawing this exact fixture last season 3-3, despite trailing 2-0 at halftime. So last year they were down 2-0 and they came back and tied it 3-3. Everton are the first side to avoid defeat away at Man United in back-to-back Premier League seasons, despite being behind at half in both times. So they were behind at half this season and last season, and they came back and tied it. So that's also pretty cool. But what were you saying?
I was going to say, for Everton, it just goes to show you that you could never count a team out. Everyone basically thought, you know, when Ancelotti was, he basically quit on the team and, you know, went to go coach Real Madrid. And they brought in Rafa Benitez. And Rafa, he's not a bad coach, but he's not generally looked at as like a legendary coach. Not one of the all-timers. Not a, you know, a generally good coach. And when it comes to signings, they haven't even, you know, signed anyone that like that broke the bank for them. They haven't signed any impact players. In fact, they actually lost like a pretty good player in Gylfi Sigurdsson. Obviously, he's in jail now because of what he did. But you know, seeing the fight that this team has is very impressive. And you know, you could go ahead and, you know, make a counterpoint and say, yeah, but Ronaldo wasn't playing. But you know, Ronaldo, he just came to United. You know, even without Ronaldo, this United team was basically looked at as a threat. And like, it just goes to show you, like I said, you can never count a team out because of, you know, just because, you know, there's like a coaching change or maybe like a team that stayed put when it comes to transfers and stuff like that. And it's just pretty impressive for Everton. You know, like I said, they don't have Gylfi Sigurdsson this year. They don't have James Rodriguez, who went and destroyed his career by signing for a team in Qatar, I think. I think it's called Al-Rayyan or something.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's career suicide right there. But no, it was a really, really good game for Everton and a pretty okay game for United, I guess. Bruno Fernandes, you know, once again disappearing under the spotlight. It's
yeah,
crazy to see. I don't know what happened. Ever since Ronaldo came onto the squad, he's just been basically non-existent. And there's another point, and it begs the question: do you think Ronaldo should play every game? I know the obvious answer is no, because he's obviously 36. But do you feel like maybe even if Ronaldo had played this game, do you think that United would have gone on to win?
No, not really, because I thought that, like I said, they came out flat. They were good the first half, and then the second half kind of came out flat. So maybe he would have given them the extra boost. But at the same time, Ronaldo's not at the age where he's not the Madrid CR7 where you can give him the ball and he'll create, and you know, he'll pass players up and he'll shoot from outside the box. He can do that, but not as consistently as he used to. So I think that he's still great and everything, but Man United would have needed more creativity from guys like Bruno Fernandes, you know, because he controls a lot. Bruno Fernandes controls a lot of movement. He's responsible for a lot of creative play. So without that, it's really hard to get any good shots in, you know, and Anthony Martial is scoring goals. Ronaldo's more of like he'll get the ball and he'll make a couple nice moves, but they need creativity, man. And they didn't have creativity in the midfield at all that game.
Yeah, they usually rely on Bruno Fernandes for that creativity. But like I said, I'm not sure what it is, but ever since Ronaldo's came to the squad, he's just been going through a very, very like noticeable dip in form. It's crazy.
Yeah, and now Everton are tied with Man United on points. So they're 14 points. So it's going to be very interesting. It's about like four teams tied at 14 points. So
yeah, it's a very tight race so far. It's a very tight race. But like I said, there's a long way to go. You still have 31 more games. So it's tough. Next game was, I'm just going to segue over into Tottenham and Aston Villa. Tottenham trying to find their form again after basically winning the first three games and then losing their next three. But they eventually found their form again this game. And then the person I'd like to talk about mostly is Heung-min Son, who is definitely, definitely on his way to becoming, you know, the player that he was during the first three game weeks. You know, during the first three game weeks, it kind of felt like he could do no wrong. No Harry Kane, no help whatsoever. You know, the supporting cast, not that great at Tottenham, but, you know, Heung-min Son, he just created. He created. He was a fantastic playmaker. He was a great striker as well. And then during the three game weeks where they struggled and eventually lost, you kind of feel like, you know, he kind of disappeared. But this game, he's fantastic. You know, he had two assists this game. One of them was to, I believe, Lucas Moura. That was the second goal. And I believe the first goal was to Højbjerg. Yeah. It was Pierre-Emile Højbjerg. Son running down the wing, Harry Kane was also running right next to Heung-min Son, and pretty questionable decision. I mean, instead of passing to Harry Kane, who could have maybe created some space for himself and maybe scored on went on to score a goal, Son decided to pass to Højbjerg instead, who was kind of behind him, but not really. But he eventually went on to score, and it kind of makes you think: did Son purposely not pass to Harry Kane because he knows that Harry Kane's struggling hard this season? There's something there, I think. Maybe I'm looking into it too much, but I feel like because of Harry Kane's massive dip in form, maybe Heung-min Son is thinking twice before he passes to Harry Kane. Because if you look at it, Harry Kane was, he still is one of the premier strikers in the Premier League, which is basically the best league in the world. But this year, I don't know what it is. Maybe he's just, mentally not there in Tottenham. He's just mentally checked out of that club, waiting for his next team. But it is crazy. I don't know how many goals he scored, but he's definitely not on par to finish where he usually finishes in that,
20 to 20. Goal, by the way.
None, right? Yeah, I had a feeling. I just don't want to say that.
We need to put out an APB for this guy. Has anyone
seen Harry Kane? We're talking about a guy that had 30 goals last year. He led the league in both goals and assists. We are 7 weeks into the season. Damn. He hasn't scored once. It is crazy. He's just mentally checked out. He's mentally checked out for me. And it's just crazy to see, because if you want to mentally check out when you're, eliminated from contention. Mentally check out when you're basically, nearing the end of the season. But we are in the seventh week, man. You still have 30 weeks. If you're holding out for maybe a transfer in the winter window, that's fine. But at least play well. Because that 180/200 million that Manchester City were offering during the summer, I doubt they offer that now with the current form that you're in now.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Yeah, he does not look like a guy worth 180 to me. Not at the moment, no. Moving on, Heung-min Son scores again, he assists again to Lucas Moura. He was running down the left wing, passes very, very elegantly right in front of the keeper. Keeper couldn't do anything about it to Lucas Moura, who ends up scoring. Aston Villa end up, coming back with a goal. Ollie Watkins. He's a name that we have not seen recently. If anyone that, plays fantasy for the Premier League, that Ollie Watkins was basically one of the best strikers, one of the best options in general that you could have on your team last year. But since the addition of Danny Ings, you don't really see him do much. You're not really seeing Watkins play or getting a lot of game time, but it was nice to see him get on the score sheet this season. It was nice to see him get some game time. It was a very, very simple header into goal. It was not enough for Aston Villa to beat Tottenham, and Tottenham find their form again in winning 2-1, and hopefully it just keeps continuing, and hopefully Harry Kane either finds his form again, or Nuno just realizes that Harry Kane is mentally checked out, and he starts relying on other players, maybe giving an audition to other players. I know they have a couple of backup strikers on that team that are definitely waiting for their chance. And, hopefully they do. I really, really like the formation that Nuno went with during week one, where Son was basically striker, and you had Steven Bergwijn on the left wing and Lucas Moura on the right wing. I feel like if Harry Kane needs maybe a wake-up call, maybe he could get benched one game, come on during the end of the game maybe, and maybe Nuno could try experimenting with that front three that I was just talking about. I feel like that would maybe get them some results, because I feel like I said, since Harry Kane his comeback into the team, a lot of players are definitely relying on him to score and basically be the striker that he's always been. But like I said, he's nowhere to be found this year. Nowhere to be found. And I feel like Tottenham's struggling because of it.
Yeah, it's really bad. I mean, this is his first time he's went scoreless in the first six games of a campaign since the 2015-2016 season.
Crazy.
Yeah, so that's just not like Harry Kane at all, man. And Tottenham, remember once upon a time when Tottenham were top of the table? Now they're eighth. I mean, it could have been worse, but they're eighth now. I know there's a long season to go, but there was once upon a time where Tottenham was number one. Now they're eighth with a very close race so far. We'll see if they end up getting some separation or not. And then we'll transition to another London team. West Ham, Hammers taking on Brentford. And this was a really, really good game too. Very, very low key, very underrated game. I like this one because I really like Brentford. I love their story. I want them to keep going and keep winning. A lot of people obviously root for these newly promoted teams. And West Ham is also a team I really like. I really like their team a lot as well. I think they're underdogs. But they made a really fast start, you know, coming in playing at London Stadium, hostile environment. Mbeumo wasted two very, very nice chances in the beginning, but he didn't make a mistake with his third chance in the 20th minute, and it was kind of a tap-in, following a save from Fabianski. And West Ham didn't look too great. They looked all out of sorts in the first half, but then they reorganized after halftime. And Jerrod Bowen scored in the 80th minute, and they kind of just like, it was just kind of like they threw the kitchen sink at them. And then they just scored after that, after just pressure. They just crumbled. Brentford just crumbled under the pressure. But it looked like, I mean, it looked like it was West Ham's game to lose, and they did. They definitely lost it in the 94th minute. Yuan Wisa scored in the 94th minute with literally the last kick of the game. It was a header. Fabianski had saved the header. He pushed it away. He didn't push it away far enough. It fell to Wisa, slammed it into the net, and Brentford got them a well-needed 3 points in this very, very close and tight Premier League battle that's going on right now. And West Ham have lost 4 of their last 7 home Premier League matches, as many as they lost in their previous 20 at the London Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
And Brentford are unbeaten in all 4 away Premier League matches this season, becoming the first side to avoid defeat in their first 4 away games in the competition since Hull City in the 2008-2009 season, which is a crazy stat for a team coming in from the championship and going into hostile territory and winning like that. That's just insane. That's pretty crazy. So those are the things I pretty much took away from that game. Really good to see Brentford win a game, though, and get some very valuable 3 points.
Right, and I agree with you. I really do like the story of this team. You know, being promoted into the Premier League after, 74 years? Something like that. It's a long time. And for them to come into an obvious upgrade in competition compared to their championship, and for them to do this well, especially on the defensive end, it's really impressive to see. You know, everyone, you know, when they heard of, you know, when they heard about Brentford, and they obviously, the first person that comes to mind is Ivan Toney. I keep bringing this up, but like, again, a very impressive stat line from last season, 33 goals, 9 assists in the championship. That's the first person that comes to mind. You know, you'd always think that, oh, you know, if we can stop Ivan Toney, you know, we basically got this, you know, we basically got this game in the bag. Mm-hmm. But what everyone did not see coming is, you know, their fantastic defense. Their defense has been very, very good so far. They are very, very focused. They make the right adjustments. They make the right moves. They make the right, you know, transitions into defense. And they are definitely not an easy team to score on. And you could see that with both the easy teams and the other tougher teams that Brentford has played against this season. It's crazy to see. Anyone could see that from the Brentford and or Liverpool game, the one that finished off 3-3. You know, tying with Liverpool 3-3 is pretty insane in itself. You know, to not let them score, you know, more than that, and also, you know, coming away with 1 point is very impressive for them to see. And at the same time, obviously for Brentford, you know, you hope to see them stay in the Premier League. And I thought this win was very impressive for a reason. You talk about a hostile environment and you talk about the London Stadium, but everyone doesn't realize that the London Stadium is considerably bigger than other stadiums compared to the other teams in the Premier League. So obviously, if you have a bigger stadium for a home team, you're going to have more fans. More fans equals more noise. For them to come in, you know, ignore all that, you know, opposition, ignore all that, you know, the noise, the distractions, you know, the home fans basically cheering the team on, or maybe saying some negative comments to Brentford. For them to ignore all that, put that to the side, you know, basically put their hard hat on and, you know, score in the 94th minute on the last kick of the game, that's just crazy to see. It's not something that's going to be talked about for long or very much about, but I feel like it was very impressive to watch as I was watching that game.
Yeah, man, definitely. I agree. I think Brentford's a great story, like I said. And it's hopeful, but I really hope they do get like a Europa League maybe out of this season. It's pretty hopeful, but it would be nice to see that.
Oh, that's definitely true. Moving on to basically the highlight of that game week, we're going to talk about Manchester City and Liverpool. And we're going to dedicate quite a bit of time to this segment because, you know, this is basically, you know, that heavyweight battle that we're waiting to see every season. You know, the battle of the heavyweights, the top two contenders for the Premier League title. They're going at it. And Mo Salah, man, that man is crazy. That man is insanely good.
Oh, yeah, man. He's on a different level this season. He's just carrying this team and proving to everyone that it might be my turn for that Ballon d'Or, but we'll get to that later.
I mean, if we're talking about current form, then absolutely. He definitely has a case. Manchester City obviously coming in, you know, I believe that they were top of the table. I believe so. Or they were at least tied for first with Liverpool before they came into the game. And, you know, obviously they both walked away with 1 point. Not enough, obviously, because Chelsea, because of the 3 points that they earned, they go top of the table now. But first goal was fantastic. You know, you obviously look at the chances that came before the first goal. It was very, very tough. The first serious attempt, I believe, was by Phil Foden, you know, running down that left wing. You know, he obviously plays that left midfield, but he always loves stretching to that left wing. Obviously, that's probably a tactic by Pep Guardiola, knowing that what he knows about football, he's crazy. He's maybe the best tactician in the Premier League, maybe in the world, essentially. But Phil Foden running down the left wing, you know, Alisson being there to save the ball, it was very, very tense. But going on to the first goal, Mo Salah running down the wing, kind of stretching into that midfield, giving a very, very perfect through ball to Sadio Mane, who scores effortlessly. Because, you know, that through pass, that was fantastic. I am not underestimating or disrespecting the goal that Sadio Mane scored, but the through ball that Salah gave him was just crazy. It was so good. It was crazy good.
He didn't have to do anything. I mean, he just had to slot the ball home. The through pass did most of the work, you know?
Exactly. He literally just served that goal up to Mane on a silver platter. It was easy, it was simple, it was fantastic, it was very tactical. You know, Liverpool go up 1-0. Really, really good moment between Sadio Mane and Mo Salah, who obviously have suffered from chemistry issues the past couple of seasons, but, you know, they're kind of working on it, and it's great to see Mo Salah obviously assisting Sadio Mane. I believe the first goal from Manchester City, I believe that they equalize after with Phil Foden. Phil Foden, again, running down that left wing. I believe this one came in the second half, though. It was the second half. Phil Foden running down that left wing, you know, giving a very low driven shot to Alisson. He was just literally a second late. You know, he just dived literally a second late. You know, you see the ball sliding behind him very, very easily, you know, running into that, you know, that bottom right corner. Really, really good goal for Phil Foden, the wonder kid from Manchester City. The guy obviously coming in from the Manchester City Academy, you know, being chosen by Pep himself. You know, he's a very, very, very bright spot in Manchester City's midfield. And like I said, a very simple goal for him. What came after was one of the best things I've ever seen since I started watching the Premier League.
They could just call it the goal.
It was the goal. I don't care. We're in the seventh league, but to me, honestly, that's the goal of the season.
Oh, yeah.
100%. Week 38, come back to me week 38. I doubt that I will find a better goal than what I saw. Mo Salah, dude, he's just made something out of nothing. The guy is literally on the right wing, surrounded by players, surrounded by two Manchester City defenders, Bernardo Silva in front of him. You know, literally, he looks like he's trapped right there. And you see Salah literally just dribbling, you know, knocking Bernardo Silva on his back, leaving two Manchester City defenders in the dust right behind him. He goes in, he sees Aymeric Laporte in front of him, who's obviously a very, very good defender. And you feel like, okay, Salah, obviously, he got through those three defenders. But it looks like, you know, Laporte is going to be the guy that stops him. And then Mo Salah just, no. He says no. Dribbles from his left to his right, switches legs. You know, obviously give that gives Laporte that little, you know, bit, you know, shake and bake. You kind of see him, you know, go left and then, you know, suddenly go right. Obviously that takes Laporte off guard. Salah shoots with his right foot, which is his weak foot. You know, mm-hmm. coming in from that impossible angle. It just slides in, kind of hits the bar on the way in. You know, the bar helps it gets in. What a goal from Mo Salah, man. I remember watching that live and I went absolutely insane. We're talking about a man that literally just dribbled at least 500 million euros worth of defenders right there in a couple seconds.
Oh yeah, it was absolute scenes, as they say in the UK when he scored that goal. It was just crazy. Everyone was in a big game like that, you know, tied up 1-1. Unfortunately, it didn't win them the game, but in front of the fans, Anfield is going crazy. To pull a Houdini move like that, bro, it was literally just like watching prime Messi just doing his thing, leaving people in his wake. He was just out of this world, man. That goal is ridiculous on the highest level of ridiculousness. It was absurd, and I was very, very happy for him to score a goal like that because he's been doing it so well this whole season. And that goal is just kind of like the cherry on top to top off and say, like, do you guys see me now? Are you guys noticing me now? Like,
it is, yeah. Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I mean, you know, obviously you have Messi and Ronaldo. They're legends. They are all-timers. They are, you know, 1 and 2 when it comes to, like, best players in the world. But if we're going to talk about current run of form, I doubt that you can, you know, place Messi or Ronaldo up top there. It is absolutely insane what this guy is doing right now. And it is so crazy because, like, I honestly feel like this entire game answered every single criticism that you can, like, literally try to, you know, put on Salah. You know, your first criticism being, you know, you don't pass to Mane or you have poor chemistry with Mane or you're a selfish player. You have Salah assisting to Mane. When he could have clearly just kept going on goal and shot it and most likely would not have gone in. He decided to, you know, pass that opportunity up, give it to Mane, scores the goal. Second criticism, you talk about Salah being maybe a pace merchant being that he knows how to run, he knows how to have pace, he has that speed. Does he know how to do much else? Not really. That's basically what a pace merchant is. You talk about a pace merchant, Salah literally just dribbles. He speeds past them, yes, but he also dribbles. That requires another skill. We talk about other criticisms where people see be like, you know, all Salah does is dribble and shoot and whatever like that. You know, he obviously dribbles and he shoots. The last criticism is the right foot. Everyone saw talking about, you know, Salah can't shoot with his right foot. You know, if you can stop him shooting from his left foot, you're basically guaranteed, you know, a clean sheet. Or basically you're guaranteed Salah not contributing to that game. Salah shoots with his weak foot, scores. You know, It was just, man, I remember going crazy. Like, I'm not, like, a huge Liverpool fan, and I'm not the kind of guy that's basically going to simp over Mo Salah because he's Egyptian. You know, everyone in Egypt basically, like, literally worships him. Talking about, like, you know, he loves literally everything that he does. But even at that moment, man, I had to get up and clap. You know what I mean? I just had to give him his respect right there because, like you said, it was Messi-esque. Like, that last time I saw something like that was definitely, definitely prime Messi. We're talking about that 2012-2013 Messi right there.
Yeah, man. It brought back shades of, you know, the goal in the Spanish Cup final against Bilbao where he just kept leaving players in his wake and he would just get so low to the ground where you couldn't get him. It was crazy, man. Unfortunately, it didn't win them the game. Yeah, this time around, but it was still a very, very good goal. Very good.
It was. And seeing Kevin De Bruyne's goal to equalize was definitely disappointed, but it didn't take away anything from what Salah did. You know, obviously Salah did literally everything that he could to try to put his team up top. And it was very disappointing to see, you know, Kevin De Bruyne's shot was fantastic, but I feel like, you know, that deflection off the defender at the last second kind of helped it go in. I'm not sure if it would have went out, if that defender wasn't there, but you know, things happen, and I'm sure that Liverpool were very happy to come away with a point compared to nothing if they had lost. I'm sure they would have loved 3 points, but like I said, you know, things don't always go your way. And like I said, it's a very long season. You still have 31 weeks to go. You have a lot of chances to go up top. And, you know, you kind of hope that Manchester City slip up maybe a week or two and you could kind of gain some ground on them. But as far as the head-to-head matchups go, this was definitely the game of the season so far for me.
Yeah, man, 100%, and for me too. And just a couple things I took away from this game was some really interesting facts, actually. So Liverpool remain the sole Premier League side yet to lose in a top flight this season. So extending their unbeaten run in all competitions to 19 matches since their 3-1 defeat to Real Madrid back in April. And Liverpool have only managed to beat Man City one of the last 7 occasions in the Premier League. They drew 3 times, lost 3 times, conceding 14 times across those 7 fixtures. So these are always really, really high quality games. It's always really good goals. Most of the last goal from midfield against them, I think it was a year or two ago. So he knows how to score great goals against his team, and he proved it again. So let's just transition real quick into France, really just to talk about PSG going up against Rennes. Rennes is, they're like a top, they're, I mean, they're a bottom tier team in the French league, and PSG was unbeaten until this game. A very nice finish. It was a surprise to everyone, really. It was a very, very nice finish on the stroke of halftime. Laborde fired them ahead, and then it only took them a matter of seconds to score their second goal in the second half. So literally, first goal they scored was in the 45th minute on the cusp of halftime. The second goal, this goal was right after halftime. So they meant business. They came out firing. And PSG struggled to get going really after halftime, and we've seen that a lot, but they've just have so much star power to the point where it just gets them by. But this game, their luck ran out, I think. And they did get the ball back into the net, but it was ruled out. Mbappe was ruled out by VAR for offside, and Rennes just kind of did their thing and held out for the win. Again, PSG, we talked about it the last time, in the last episode. They still are developing that chemistry. They kind of remind me of, I'm going to transition to make a basketball reference here to our listeners that also follow the NBA. The Heatles, the Miami Heat, when Bosch, Dwayne Wade, and LeBron came together, and they had a really bad start to their first season. I mean, PSG's been winning. This is the first game they lost, but they didn't have the greatest start. I think they got off to like 7-14, something like that. They got off to a pretty bad start, and everyone was panicking, but PSG's not at that point yet, but I just think it takes time when so many dynamos come together and inject all the star power into a team. So I think they'll eventually get it, but again, the French league is not something they should be struggling with. I mean, but this is only their first loss. So, and then just a couple stats here. No team has beaten PSG more than Rennes in League One, which is pretty insane. And Paris, PSG have lost their first League One game since last April, ending around 15 games without losing in a top flight. This is their first loss by a margin of 2 goals in the French league since February, 2-0 to Monaco. So pretty much it about this game. I'm not really going to go into it too much, but if you want to add anything, feel free, man.
Yeah. Yeah, Rennes is not a team that should be beating PSG. Not a team that should have beaten PSG last year. Not a team that should be beating PSG this year. But you made a pretty spot-on comparison. The PSG team that is currently constructed, it kind of does feel like that 2010-2011 Miami Heat team. You know, like I said, like a lot of superstars, a lot of, you know, conflicting mentalities, you know, coming together, it will make for chemistry issues, and that was expected for this team. That's not, you know, that was to be expected. But for them to be struggling this hard in the league is surprising to see, because everyone knows that, you know, when you put this team together, everyone was basically looking at what they're going to do in the Champions League, and they basically thought of the French League as an afterthought, thinking that, you know, this is easy for PSG, that they're going to cruise to a victory. And yes, this is the first game that they've lost, and they've won every other game, or they've at least, you know, won or tied every other game. But at the same time, you watch these games, and it feels like they're definitely struggling. And yes, they're struggling because they haven't found that chemistry. They haven't found that glue guy that brings together the team. But, like, it's kind of weird to see, you know. Like, even based on star power alone, you should see PSG dominating. But, you know, you kind of just feels like a very big, like a cluster of players with basically no chemistry. And it allows the other teams to take advantage of that. Like you said, Rennes scored on the cusp of halftime. And that basically woke PSG up. Like, they're literally heading into the locker room saying, like, oh, wait, what's going on? We're having a team that basically strays off, you know, relegation each and every year. They kind of scored on us at the moment. So you come out at halftime and you literally scored literally right then and there. I guarantee if they had walked into the game with that mentality, they'd probably go into halftime up like 4-0, 5-0, something like that. And they have the ability to do that. They have the ability to be up 4 or 5-0 on teams going into halftime based on that star power alone. But it's just them finding chemistry is taking a little too long for my liking, and I'm kind of getting afraid because the group stages of the Champions League are ending, and I guarantee you, if you do not have it together by the knockout stages of the Champions League, you will not win. And that's basically what this team is constructed to do, to win the Champions League. They do not care about the French League because they've won it, I believe, what, 8 of the last 9 years? That's nothing to them. They brought all these players on to stay contenders, or basically stay winners of the French League, but at the same time, to win the Champions League. And like I said, you reach the knockout stage, I guarantee you, if you have chemistry issues, you will not find your chemistry in the knockout stages. You're going to get bamboozled, you are going to get taken off guard, you are going to be caught by surprise, because it happens often in the knockout stages. Once a team finds that form, I don't care who you are, like we saw last year in the semifinals, we saw FC Porto take out Juventus because they found that form during those two games, the home leg and the away leg. And FC Porto, like I said, they're not like a bad team, essentially. But if we're going to talk about the depth and quality between Juventus and FC Porto, FC Porto should not have won those games.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. They just can't be giving up these games in the French League. There should be gimmies for them. No disrespect to the French League. I'm sorry, but every single game should be a gimme for PSG with the amount of talent and star power they have. So anything short of that is definitely a disappointment, and they just got to figure it out. And I mean, they will. It's just a matter of time, but they will figure it out. So here comes a part of the show where I start kind of, you know, reminiscing, and the pain comes out. And I know this is a clean podcast, so I can't swear, but we might have to go and change that in the settings, because the way this Barcelona team is going, man, I don't know how much longer I can suffer through this, because this is just misery at its finest. And I know we're not gonna talk about the Champions League games. Barcelona lost 3-0. That's probably all I'm gonna talk about in Benfica. But the stat that really, I'm not even gonna talk about the game against Atletico Madrid, because we lost 2-0. Thomas Lemar and Suarez both scored. We were outplayed. We played well for probably like the first 20 minutes of the game. And after that, it was just total chaos. It was more of the same that we see every single game. Poor defense, absolutely no tactics. Players, the no midfield. Midfield is our holding midfielder is a dinosaur. And Sergio Busquets that is still...
Yeah.
This coach just insists on playing people that are legends in the Catalan football, like him and Sergio Roberto and those guys, but he refuses to start people like Coutinho and give other players a chance, which just baffles me. But anyway, Luis Suarez has scored against every single team in La Liga now, which is insane, because obviously he was in Barcelona for a while, and he had a good run there. Then he went to Atletico Madrid. The last time we played him last season, I guess he was injured and he didn't play. But I'm sure if he did play, he would have scored on us anyway. But he scored this game. He didn't celebrate, which was really nice, because I feel like the way we let him go was terrible. And I probably would have celebrated if I was him, just out of how terrible the Barca board just handled it, and I would have probably celebrated, honestly, if I was
yeah
him.
You know, he actually just revealed, I believe it was this week, where he said the way he was informed that he was not going to continue at Barcelona, it was a 40-second phone call with Ronald Koeman.
Yeah.
40 seconds, yeah. Where literally Koeman just told him, "You are not in my plans. No, thank you. No, anything like that." He literally called him, told him, you know, thank you, or basically just, you know, leave. You're leaving the squad. And after 40 seconds, he hung up. A player that has given basically everything in his, like, everything he physically could to the team for how long? Suarez came to Barcelona in, what, 2013?
Mm-hmm.
It was 2013, right? Yeah. It is just disrespectful at the highest level. And for him, to see him score against Barcelona and not celebrate and, you know, kind of, you know, be respectful, it just proves how much of a good person he is. You know, you could, you know, he's a little bit controversial at times, but no one should be treated like that, especially not someone who is basically considered a legend at Barcelona.
Yeah, no, he was definitely a class act for sure, and I really, really appreciate it. I still love him as a player. But aside from the game, you know, I'm not really going to go into the game. Like I said, it was more of what we've been seeing. The thing that's absolutely just killing me is Ronald Koeman is playing with house money right now. It's like he knows he's backed by Laporta and the rest of the Barca board, that to the point that he just has this supreme arrogance. He's so arrogant. He just does whatever he wants. He plays without any tactics or any, and he just tells players, he treats players so disrespectfully. Like, who do you think you are? You don't even have a track record. You were coaching Everton, and you were coaching the Dutch national team. Dutch national team is good, yeah, but I mean, you guys haven't won any trophies, and you coached Everton, and that didn't go so well for you. So I just don't understand. He gets this confidence, supreme confidence, because he knows that he's essentially. He's probably not going to get fired, and Laporta has said that. He came out and said that he's keeping Koeman for now. So if he hasn't gotten fired by now, I don't think, unfortunately, as I hate to say, I don't think he's going to get fired this season. And as long as he stays coach, this is just going to become normal. We are going to lose games like this. We're going to be supremely disrespected. One of the Benfica players came out after the Champions League game and he said this wasn't even a test for us. Like, for someone to come and say that about Barcelona, it's just, if you really cared about the club, like the Barca board say they do, like Laporta says he does, you should do everything in your power to get this man out, because you know that he's just wrong for the team. And you need to get out of your old ways and stop playing people like Sergio Roberto, stop playing Busquets. And buying Luke De Jong, I'm sorry, I know that it's in the past now, but no, still, it was still a horrible decision, because he just does not do anything. And then players like Eric Garcia, defense, I mean, come on, like, you're totally just tarnishing the Barca name, and all the fans, majority, I don't want to say all the fans, because I can't speak for everyone, but most of all the Barca fans that I personally know want this guy out, and they want him out, like, yesterday, like, as soon as possible, like, take your stuff, do yourself a favor, do us a favor, and just get out of the club. I know our options aren't better. I know Andrea Pirlo isn't better. Who knows? We can't really say that. But yeah, we don't know how much better they're going to be. But I mean, come on. Like, this guy is showing no sense of, you know, like any tactical knowledge. And every decision he makes is pretty much cost us a goal, or it's just horrible. So I don't know what's going to change, but something has to change fast.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. And this confidence / arrogance that he has right now, it wasn't here like 2 weeks ago. After the loss to Bayern Munich, after the tie, I believe it was the first league game after the Champions League defeat. I believe they drew, and then they lost the game after. You look at Ronald Koeman's general expression and how he's talking to the press. He's answering questions like, "Oh, I don't know anything about my future. I don't know. They haven't talked to me. you know, I still consider myself the coach of Barcelona until they tell me otherwise. And then suddenly, right before the international break begins, he starts getting this confidence. And that's when Laporta came out and says, oh, Ronald Koeman is staying for at least this season. And I don't know what happened, why this change was brought about, but I'm confused. Like, if Ronald Koeman was doing bad, you should at least try to pressure him, or I'm not telling you to threaten him with, you know, his job, but, you know, applying that constant pressure, applying that pressure to get results will work. For you to just change that up and you'd be like, you know, we have full confidence in our coach, he's staying at least this season, blah blah blah, and basically extending the leash that he already had is crazy, because we haven't seen any improvement since. They lost to Benfica, who are also, like I said, a good team by themselves in their own domestic league. When it comes to world football or Champions League football, or, you know, basically football where they basically have to leave their country, they're not great. You know,
3-0 against Benfica.
And it's that should never happen. Exactly. And the players are disrespectful. You have a player that was saying, you know, this was a, you know, test for us. You have a player coming up to Ansu Fati who is literally just a child. Like, yes, he is a very skilled child. He is a very good kid. But you come up to him and you're like, you're supposed to be the number 10. Wait, who was it? It was actually a player.
It was Otamendi.
No, it was Otamendi.
Yeah, he's Argentinian. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like, yes, okay, that was out of respect for his, you know, his Argentinian teammate in Messi. But, like, still, man, like, he's a kid. Like, what do you, like, I get it. You're trying to get into his head and maybe, you know, mess with his game a little bit. But, like, it's disrespectful. And it's not something that Barcelona is used to, you know, basically having teams step over them. And I'm sorry to say that because I know how much of a diehard fan you are. But, like, it's the case. Like, there's no way around it. Barcelona is not the Barcelona that everyone used to fear. Or, you know, at least, like, if Barcelona had a down season, and that down season a couple years ago was, like, you know, maybe not winning La Liga or the Copa del Rey or whatever it is, but they still ended up winning something, you would call that a down season for Barcelona. This season, I guarantee you, if Barcelona win La Liga this season, that would be a miracle. That would be a miracle. Nothing less. Yeah, nothing short of a miracle. If they win the Copa del Rey, that's a miracle to me. Any trophy or any achievement that this team can achieve this season is more than enough to convince me to keep Koeman on at least another season. But I am so sure that's not going to happen. That's why I'm saying, like, it's just not going to happen. The right move is to fire him. Like, even if you're going to bring on an interim coach for the rest of the season until you can find a good replacement or a suitable replacement, that change of pace, that change of mentality, going from Koeman to somebody that's more team-oriented with Barcelona would be better. And yes, the options at the moment are not great. You have Antonio Conte, who I don't even consider an option because that guy turned down the Tottenham job when he figured out he won't take it because he found out how much money that they were willing to spend.
Mm-hmm.
And Antonio Conte wants a team that could spend. He went to Inter, who, you know, basically spent a lot to get the players that they had during that season where they won the Serie A title. And so, like I said, I don't consider Conte an option. Who do you have? You have, you know, Pirlo, who is, like, he just needs more experience. I don't consider him a good coach. Not because he's not a good coach, because he's just inexperienced. You know, you retire. He's like, yes, okay, he was a fantastic playmaker. He was a great passer. But that does not translate to coaching. That never translates to coaching. You have to have a manager's mind with proper experience before you can call yourself a good manager. And Pirlo managed Juventus last season, and that was a catastrophe. They did not... they ended up winning... They did end up... No, they didn't even end up winning the Serie A title. They did not win the Serie A title. They got eliminated to Porto, which was honestly just a tragedy in itself. They had to let go of Cristiano Ronaldo because he just wasn't sure of the team direction. So, like, basically just L's all around. And I just don't think he's a good coach. I feel like at the moment, if you're going to have to literally fire Koeman right now, bring in Xavi. Chavi's great. He's doing fine in Qatar. Mm-hmm. He's introduced Tiki Taka with his Qatari club. No problem with that. He's doing well. And if he can do that with a bunch of players who are obviously not as great as the Barcelona players are, imagine what he could do with the Barcelona players. It would be a club legend coming back. He's had more than enough experience in other leagues. He's a midfielder, and he's also that playmaker, one of the best playmakers in the history of football. That doesn't translate to coaching, sure, but it gives you a pretty good advantage. I feel like he would be a really, really good interim coach. I feel like it would be a little bit disrespectful to put him in the interim position and maybe get someone else later on. So maybe that's the reason they haven't really done it yet, or maybe they haven't pulled the trigger on that part yet. But they should definitely consider bringing in Xavi. He would be loved by the players. He would be loved by the fans. He would be loved by the board. And he has the experience to make this team respectable. I'm not going to talk about winning. I'm going to talk about respect. That's my point.
Yeah, and just to finish it off, like you said, Barca needs a tiki-taka. It's in their DNA. That's the players they get from La Masia are already used to that type of play, and they play. That's most of the players they go for and get. Koeman has disrupted that. He's run away from that. He chose players that don't really do that anymore. So we need a coach, ideally Xavi, from the candidates that is familiar with that tiki-taka and could play it. So. Hopefully, man. We can just hope at this point as a Barca fan. All I can do is just hope.
Hey, moving on to the last segment of the show, we're going to talk about the Ballon d'Or. The Ballon d'Or. Pretty interesting race this year for that award. Obviously, for those of you that don't know, the Ballon d'Or is basically the MVP equivalent of football. Basically, the best player in all five leagues are considered for this award. And they have a pretty extensive process. They have like a short list of 30 people. And then after a while, it goes down to 10 people. After a while, it goes down to 5, 3. And then the winner is announced. And recently, the 30-man list was revealed with a couple interesting names. Like, obviously, if you're going to talk about the top 30 players in the world, you're going to have a bunch of names that you don't usually hear. But this was pretty interesting to see. Obviously, you have the players that you are definitely going to see on that. Like, you're definitely used to seeing players like Mo Salah, Neymar, Messi, Mbappe, Lewandowski, Harry Kane, you know, Bruno Fernandes, Cristiano Ronaldo, Kevin De Bruyne. You always see these players basically year in, year out for this award. And then you have, you know, players that you don't really see that much. Like, you definitely know about these players, but you don't know them that well. You know, obviously, like Azpilicueta, you have Nicola Barella, you have Leonardo Bonucci and Giorgio Chiellini, you have Jorginho. And it's a pretty interesting list so far. Obviously, you definitely have, like, players that you definitely see going to the final spot. You have Jorginho. Jorginho has had a very, very good year. You're talking about a player that won the Europa or the UEFA Euros. He won that this year. He won the Champions League this year. He placed third place in the Nations League. He's won a lot this year. You know, he's doing very good for himself this year. You have obviously Messi. Messi has always been on that list. He's had a fantastic season. Same with Ronaldo. You have Robert Lewandowski, who I'm going to make my case for him to win it because I feel like he definitely deserves it. He was going to definitely be the winner during the 2020 season, but obviously that was postponed or basically canceled because of the pandemic that we were going through. And he's on the list this year for his accomplishments of last year, but I feel like he should definitely win it based off of his accomplishments last year. We're talking about a guy that won the Bundesliga title, the Champions League title, the DFB Pokal, which is basically the German Cup. You also won the German Super Cup. He did pretty well for Poland as well. You know, I'm making my case for him to win it because I feel like based off of his stats in 2020 alone, he should definitely make at least the top three, if not win it.
Yeah, I'm going to go a different route. I agree with going with Lewandowski, but I was thinking about it yesterday, and I was thinking about Salah. But still hasn't won anything. And when he plays with the national team, he's pretty underwhelming, I'm not going to lie. So my mind immediately went to Benzema, as much as it hurts being a diehard Barca fan. But I'm also unbiased. I got to be unbiased. But Benzema, from what I've been watching, I watched a lot of Real Madrid last year and this year. I know they didn't win La Liga last year. They came in second. Atletico Madrid won. But I think what he's doing, carrying that team, he's literally, every time they're down, he somehow finds a way to get them to win. He scores spectacular goals. He just won UEFA Nations League today with France. So that's who I'm making the case for, just simply because he does technically have a trophy to his name, and I know they do go by that in the Ballon d'Or. They kind of see if you've won anything. But unless maybe, I don't know if Salah's going to win. I don't know even if there's going to be it's going to be decided before the Premier League's done, right?
No, for sure. I believe that they announced it in January or February or something like that.
Yeah, so I think it might be too late for Salah because he hasn't won anything, but he's just starting to make his case. Maybe for next year, he should be a shoo-in for next year to win. But this year, I'm going to have to go with Benzema, honestly, just because either him or Messi. Messi did win a Copa America for the first time, first international trophy he's ever won. But as far as club is concerned, Barca are just god awful last year and has absolutely no accomplishments in the club side. Whereas Benzema has just won the UEFA Nations League, so he does have an international trophy to his name. And the way he's been playing this season and last season, he's just been the guy since Ronaldo left to really just get them out of those tight spots and win them games. But it's tough. If I were to say who's going to win it, probably Robert Lewandowski. But as far as my pick goes, I'd probably say Benzema, but if you were to ask me who'd honestly win it, probably be Lewandowski, just because he's won pretty much everything. So
it was six titles. That sucks too, essentially.
Yeah.
And you make a really, really good case with Messi. Yes, Messi didn't win La Liga last year, but he was the top scorer, and he finally broke that curse that he's had with the Argentinian national team by winning the Copa America, and he had a very, very memorable journey during that tournament, obviously beating the teams that usually beat him, and obviously beating Brazil in the final. That was memorable. That was, for me, if it's not going to be Robert Lewandowski, I definitely do think that Messi deserves it more than anyone. And I agree with all your points about Benzema, but again, with the Ballon d'Or, you also have to take into account, if not individual awards, top scorer, top assister, whatever it is, you have to look into awards that he's won. He did not win La Liga last year, I believe. Atletico Madrid won it, right?
Yeah.
He didn't win La Liga last year. He had a pretty okay run at the Euros, but again, France didn't even reach the final, so that's that. The Nations League is okay. Yes, it's an international title, but then again, if we're going to really look at it, the Nations League is basically a tournament to cover up friendly games, which are basically useless. They literally just took the same games that they were going to play in a non-competitive format and made it into a tournament just to add some excitement. Does it really count as an international trophy? Yes, okay, it does. But does it have a lot of merit, among players? Not really. We're talking about, as the most recent example, Thibaut Courtois, who is the keeper for the Belgium national team, he was just literally... He literally stated a couple of days ago that, he doesn't even want to play the third place playoff game or the third place game with Italy. Obviously, Belgium got eliminated by Spain, I believe. Was it Spain? No, it was France. It was France, yeah. France eliminated them a couple of days ago. And obviously, I know that he's upset that he didn't make the final. But, my point is, if a player doesn't even want to play a game that determines if he's going to be third place or fourth place in a major tournament, does that tournament really hold merit? Does it have weight? I don't think so. I'm not saying anything bad about the Nations League, but I'm just saying it is a glorified friendly tournament for me.
Yeah, well, it kind of is, but at the same time, it's hard to take away what what it means, because he did pretty much, he scored a goal in the final, and I mean, it's more of what he's been doing essentially. So it's unfortunate because I know he won't win it, but I'm just making my case for him, especially right. because right. he's, I know he's not going to win it, but and Messi's probably not going to win it either, because just because he didn't really do anything at the club level. So it probably will be Lewandowski, but I would like to see someone else win it, just out of like maybe someone winning it for the first time. I know Lewandowski hasn't won it, but maybe someone winning it that hasn't accomplished much, maybe not the traditional Ballon d'Or winner, you know, maybe you can get someone that hasn't really won any trophies, but has just been like a performing on a crazy level. So who knows?
I feel like maybe Lewandowski is the person that fits your description, because if we're going to go with someone that's not Messi or Ronaldo, if you want someone basically new, you're going to have to make sure that player does well, or else you're not going to, it's going to be very unpopular. You remember the year that Luka Modric won it? Do you think he deserved the Ballon d'Or that year? I don't. I definitely don't.
Probably not, but he did do a lot in that World Cup run. That
it,
really
he helped. It was a fantastic run by Croatia, and they reached the final, and they lost to France, and I get it. And at the club level, he did great stuff with Madrid. He did great at the Champions League. He was fantastic. But are you trying to tell me that he did better than, you know, maybe Messi, Ronaldo, obviously Robin and Ribery were still playing that season? You know, he was definitely not in my top three when I found out that he was going to be in the top three and eventually going on to win it. That's just crazy to me. If you want to talk about a player that hasn't won it yet, a player that is good in form, a player that has won titles, it's Robert Lewandowski. It's literally no one else. Karim Benzema has been great. He has been fantastic. He's in form. But unfortunately, this award also depends on what you won. That also is taken into account by the French Football Association, who are obviously the judges. They're the ones that decide who wins it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, honestly, I think the year that Modric won it, I think it probably should have been Ronaldo or someone else to win it. But yeah, he probably shouldn't have won it that year. But it's just crazy how runs with your country help you boost your case so much, and vice versa with your club as well. But we'll see. Like I said, I think Lewandowski's going to win it. But, I mean, it's nice to see someone else win it for a change, for sure. I mean, we've had the Messi-Ronaldo thing for a while until it was broken by Luka. But, yeah, it's definitely nice to get a kind of a passing of the torch. And I think Lewandowski is the best striker in the world right now. And he's been, I think, for maybe the past couple of years. So,
absolutely. And at 33 years old, 34 now, I believe.
Yeah, man, he's an amazing player.
Dude, yeah, dude, the durability that guy has. A lot of people brush him over because, obviously, there's not a lot of competition when it comes to the Bundesliga, essentially because we've won it, 8 years in a row now? And when I say we, I mean Bayern Munich. But I get it. Like, a lot of people think of him as an afterthought because they think he's in a quote-unquote farmer's league. But, like, dude, that guy is fantastic. You put Robert Lewandowski in the Premier League on any team, he's going to show out. He's still going to be one of the top strikers in the world. It's just a matter of circumstance, the fact that he's playing in Germany. He might not be playing in Germany for long. I feel like he's going to be probably not going to be on the team next year. I feel like he wants to start playing in the Premier League starting from next year. And that's going to be a shame for him to see him go, because, you know, he's just done so much for the club. He's done so much for Bayern Munich. It's crazy. He's a club legend. We were talking about a guy that scored, 41 goals? Something like that last season? Crazy, dude.
Oh, man, that's unreal.
It is.
All right, I think that pretty much covers everything.
Yeah, that's going to wrap everything up for this week. Thank you for joining us. If you'd like to follow us on Instagram, you can follow us at the Deep End PODC. That is the Deep End PODC. And you can find us also on Twitter at the Deep End PD. We are regularly, retweeting content, asking Q&As, basically just trying to interact more with our followers. If you have any questions, any topics for us that you'd like us to talk about, please do not hesitate to let us know. And this was episode 7. Thought this was pretty well. We'll see you guys next week.
Okay, guys, thank you for listening. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.